and welcome to season 2 of 180 Degrees. For the next 8 episodes, we're sharing stories from people across Ireland working towards a cleaner energy future. We chat to the people who are making a real difference in the area of sustainable transport, home energy, and in our communities. We hear from businesses who are cutting carbon emissions, and we learn how energy research is shaping Ireland's future. 180 Degrees is brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland and is supported by the Government of Ireland. Hello, I'm your host, Louise Ryan, and joining me on the podcast today is Jan Bartsbang, a long-term EV driver living in Cork, and Shane Prendergast from SAAI's Sustainable Transport Team. In this episode, we will be chatting about electric vehicles, and we'll be exploring why people like Jan Bart have already made the switch to driving electric. Jan Bart has been driving an electric vehicle since 2012 and is a member of the Irish EV Owners Association. Shane has been working with SAAI since 2017 and is promoting the uptake of electric vehicles in Ireland. Welcome to you both, Jan Bart and Shane. Thanks for joining
me. Thanks, Louise. Thank you for having me.
Looking forward to this. So I want to kick off really, Jan Bart. You're originally from Holland and you've been
I am indeed.
You've been living in Cork for 18 years now. We can kind of hear the Cork accent there.
Yeah, my wife is from Kerry. She's not too amused by it.
Oh, dangerous. Yeah, dangerous.
I don't know. I think it's all right.
Yeah, look, you'll get away with it. Shane is from Tipperary and I'm from Limerick. So you're in good company.
That's okay. Monsters represented.
Yeah, absolutely. Jan Bart, when did you first become interested in electric vehicles and kind of, what is it about them that has sparked such an interest or passion in you?
In your intro, you mentioned 2012. 2012 is sort of when I started doing the research because I was in need of a new car. I didn't pick an electric car at that stage, though. But I went, well, it depends who you ask. I went for what's now known as a self-charging hybrid. I bought a Toyota Prius in 2012. And the reason for that was at the time, the electric cars were sort of at its infancy, if you will. And in Ireland, the only real car that was out there was the Nissan Leaf at the time. And it just didn't suit my needs at the time. So I bought a Toyota hybrid, particularly for the fuel savings. But in 2014, that changed a little. And I bought a Renault Zoe full electric. So I've been driving electric for the last 6 years. Main reason, there's a fair few actually. My main reason was actually the technological side of it. The technology behind EVs was really just fascinating. It still is. And the money saving was a lovely secondary one. And of course, the green credentials. So I went from spending about 150 euro a month in petrol, even driving a hybrid, to spending probably about 40 euro a month in electricity.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big saving every month.
You know, and that's after I actually was the first time I sat down in an electric car, I just couldn't stop smiling. And I would basically say, when everybody who's interested in electric cars, just take one for a test drive. I'll guarantee you, you will not be able to stop smiling.
Okay, they'll have to hold you to that. Were you always interested in cars, Jan Bart, or was it just specifically electric vehicles, or were you total petrol head?
No, I was absolutely not interested in cars whatsoever. In fact, I moved over here in Ireland to Ireland in 2002, and I was, what was I at the time, 23, and I didn't even have a driver's license. So I learned how to drive in Ireland out of necessity, really. Ireland has a high portion of, what is it, car ownership per head of the population. It's one of the highest ones in Europe, if not the highest ones. And I basically needed a car to get around. I couldn't do anything on a bicycle, which is what I was using in Holland.
Of course, stereotypically, yeah. Enough. And did you pass the test first time round, Jan Bart?
No, I never said I was a good driver. No, I was it 3 times, I think.
So, oh, that's pretty good.
I have my excuses, don't worry, but I won't bore you with that. Ever since then, I'm still not really a petrol head. I'm definitely an electric car enthusiast, but I wouldn't call myself a petrol head. For me, a car is very much so practicality. I need a car to get around. And if I can do that in a fun manner, in a good manner, in a cheap manner, that's great.
Definitely, I'd say, Jan Bart. And just to pick up on something you mentioned there, you talked about the savings was a big driver for switching to the electric cars. So when you were looking at buying an electric car, did you do some research or did you crack the sums on the savings that could be there over the lifespan of the car, or did it actually just come about as a nice bonus after the fact of buying it?
Well, since money was always limited, as it usually is for most people, I did have a spreadsheet, and I just used it was the NEDC figures at the time. It's the WLTP figures this time for fuel consumption and stuff. I took my average driving into play. I did a fair few sums. I took a fair few cars for test drives. I remember driving a Toyota Auris, and I had my Prius at the time. I even looked at buying a used electric car, but in 2014 the used car market just didn't really exist for electric cars. It's much, much better now, and a used electric car actually is a no-brainer at this stage for a vast majority of people.
Definitely. That kind of leads me into another item then, is that the big question, the big barrier some people see about EVs, which is the range. So when you're actually going to go fully electric, were you nervous about the range, and how did you square that circle for yourself?
I was nervous about the range. I live in North Cork, and the electric car charging network over here wasn't very good. There's still a few gaps here and there, but it's much better. And I was nervous about the range. Now, one of the good things was that I have a driveway, so I got a home charger very quickly. At the time, it came with the car, and I believe there's an SEAI grant for that at the moment. Anybody who has a driveway can just install a charge point. So I always knew that I had a fully charged car available. So it basically was just a matter of drawing a nice circle around my house of say half the normal range, because you have to be able to drive back home. So that left me with about a 60 kilometer circle around my house, roughly 60 to 70 kilometers. Actually, it's a bit more actually. And I basically came to the conclusion that I could do the vast majority of my journeys without having to charge. So that was good. But then, of course, there's a few longer trips that I do on a regular basis, being to my in-laws in North Kerry and up to Dublin. Now, going up to Dublin at the time was relatively easy. It still is, because the motorways are very well serviced. North Kerry, however, was a bit of a problem area. And it's one of the reasons why I picked the Renault Zoe over the Nissan Leaf at the time, is because of the way the charging works. I can get fairly technical on that particular side, but I'll skip that. Basically, it means that I was able to charge faster with my Renault Zoe with the charge points that were available compared to the Nissan Leaf at the time. And that just meant I had a far, far more options to charge compared to the Nissan Leaf, which builds in a bit of redundancy that if you arrive at a charge point, it's either occupied, out of service, or whatever, you have options to find something else. At the moment, I'm driving, I'm one of the fortunate people who was able to switch their car this year, and I now drive a 2020 Renault Zoe.
Well-wear, as they say here.
Thank you. Correct. Yes, well-wear. At the moment, it's not wearing much because it's sitting mostly on the driveway. That particular car can drive about 2.5 times further on the battery it has in the same form factor. So the car hasn't gotten any bigger, but the battery inside it has 2.5 times more the capacity than my old one has. That gives me a circle that was 60 kilometers. It now gives me a circle of about 180 kilometers. So living on an island 400 kilometers by 190 kilometers, that's the majority of the island. And so the charging infrastructure becomes far, far less of an issue.
Definitely. Even talking to other EV drivers out there, they all mentioned that the home charger is just such a game changer for them. Just having that convenience of being able to just go home and plug your car in, similar to as you would do with your mobile phone these days. You just go home and it's a natural habit just to plug it in, and then it's ready for you then the next morning.
Well, that's exactly it, yeah.
Do you want to just talk a little bit about the grant there actually for home chargers, just for listeners that might be interested?
Yeah, so SEA offer a grant for a home charging unit of up to €600 towards the purchase and installation of that unit. And it also applies to new electric vehicles, second-hand electric vehicles and imported electric vehicles. And that's for plug-in hybrids and for fully electric vehicles as well. So all the details can be found on our website, www.seaa.ie.
Perfect. And Jean-Bart, you always had a home charger.
Yeah, I did. And I'll just add something to what Shane was saying. When I got the car, there was a home charger included with that. If you, for the next few years, when you actually imported a car, you weren't eligible for a home charger. Or if you had a used car, you weren't eligible for the charger. So that particular change is absolutely brilliant when it comes for car users, because it basically covers all the bases. Nobody has to feel excluded. And because of the fact that it used to be, I think it was ESB themselves who actually did provided a charger. Now that you've got a grant, it opens up the market for installers as well as charge point manufacturers. So it actually is good for the market itself.
Yeah, and Bart, you obviously have a driveway. You're lucky in that sense. For people hoping to maybe switch to electric vehicles that don't have a driveway, what's the alternative for them, do you think?
Well, if you're, let's see now, so if you don't have a driveway, there's several options that you could pursue. One would be workplace charging. So if you have an employer who has a large car park and who might be willing to install a charger, I do believe there's tax incentives available in order to actually stimulate workplace charging. That's one. Number two would be charging on, obviously, the public charging infrastructure, which, depending on where you live, might be an option. You have several different varieties of chargers. You have slow chargers, fast chargers, and depending on what car you buy, which might actually influence your decision of what car to buy, it might depend on what charging is available for you. I know several people who live in Dublin and who don't have a driveway, but they use the public charging infrastructure as well as chargers that are being installed at, say, supermarkets like Lidl and Tesco in order to charge their electric cars. And a lot of them actually also have workplace chargers.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shane, do you want to come in on that as well? I suppose, is there any changes coming down the line?
I definitely have to echo what Jan Bart said there to start with, that apart from your home, the second place you spend most of your time is your workplace, really. So if there is charge points in your workplace, or if they're that way inclined, it's fantastic. There's also the tax incentive called the accelerated capital allowances that the employers avail of. Yeah, I said I'd give it a mention there. And I said, if you are lucky to live near public charging points, that's another bonus as well, particularly if they're fast ones. You can just pop down, have a cup of coffee, charge it up and pop back here to your house with a fully charged vehicle as well. But SEI have also rolled out recently a public charging infrastructure grant to be rolled out through the local authorities for the residential areas that don't have access to off-street parking. So if you are looking to get an electric vehicle and you don't have off-street parking, I would definitely say contact your local authority and have a chat with them about this grant and where to see, are they looking to avail of it and where they're looking to put in charge points as well. And SCI will also, in over the next number of months, be bringing in apartment charging solutions into our home charger grant as well. So we will be tackling the whole issue of how do you get a charge point if you're living in an apartment as well.
Yeah, and I think it's just getting rid of all those barriers for people, isn't it? You know, because like they are the real things that you think about when you're going to buy your next car. Where am I going to plug it in? Like, yeah.
Well, there are several barriers. There's the actual sort of physical barriers, so like the charge points, but there's also a lot of mental barriers and you know, like something that people would perceive as a problem, but in reality isn't as much of a problem, or isn't even a problem.
Yeah, what kind of things do people say to you, Bart? Do you know, like when you're chatting about your EV, do people say, oh, I couldn't switch to that because, you know, I couldn't be thinking about charging it, or, you know, this and that?
Well, that's the other, that's one, and charging and access to charging. And there's usually a way around that, as we just discussed. It's not as much of an issue as people think. Say, my car can do 350 kilometers in a charge. The majority of people drive, I don't know, 35, 40 kilometers a day. So it'll do you for a week. The most people, yeah. So that the range is getting getting better because of the way the electric cars are improving. The second would be the access to charging, which basically it's a bit of an overlap with the range, so it's less of an issue. The financial side of things is what a lot of people come up with. They say electric cars are expensive, and yes, it's. Yep. New cars, it's definitely an issue. Not everyone can afford a new car. However, if you have a large commute, and if you were to be able to say, I'll just use there's somebody I know in Limerick who works in Cork for Apple. He drives from Limerick to Cork and back every single day, which is, I think, wow. It's about 130 kilometers a day. Yeah, I don't know how he does it. I wouldn't be able to. But anyway, so in his case, the fuel savings alone was enough to actually offset the cost of the car. So Apple have free charge points for employees. So he was able to actually charge his car at work, basically he's driving up and down for free. So the amount of money that he's saving on fuel, he puts that money across to pay for the car. And there's a good few people who do that. So the car is basically self-financing. And that's something that I would always urge people to keep in mind. It's the total cost of ownership, not just, say, fuel cost or the car cost. It's the total cost of ownership. So it might be more affordable than you think. So that's cost. The other thing, like we said, was range. And that would really depend on where you live, how much driving you do. Again, like I said, I think the average Irish person does about 40, 50 kilometers a day. That is well within reach of any electric car on the market at the moment. If you have more than one car in your household, which a lot of the households have, you could keep a second non-electric car for the moment, or even, I don't know, plug-in hybrid to cut down on those things. There's a lot of options available for everyone.
Yeah, I'd just like to come in there as well, Jan Bart, and just echo your sentiments about the total cost of ownership. There's actually a term that I kind of use quite regularly for that, and we call it hyperbolic discounting, which is where people who are thinking about purchasing a new car, they give too much weight to the upfront costs without actually kind of doing the sums and the maths and saying, as you mentioned, that the car could, in some cases, self-finance, or it could actually wash its face when comparing to the petrol and diesel equivalents over the lifespan of the car, because you're not going to buy a car every year. It's going to be it's a big investment. It's a big asset for yourself that you're going to hold on to and you're going to enjoy. So even when you're thinking about repayments on a car, yes, for the EVs at the moment, they are going to be greater. So if you were, say, buying a new petrol car and it was like €300 a month in the repayments, but in the EV that you're looking at was somewhere in the region of €450 per month for repayments. If you're actually, say, on top of that, you're spending €150, €200 a month on fuel as well, that will actually make up the difference in your repayments that you mightn't even give a thought to when you're in the process deciding, well, which car is for me, which can I afford?
And there's other things like reduced maintenance cost. There is other things like the toll incentives, which may or may not apply to people, and motor tax.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're talking about reduced maintenance costs, have you ever had any issues? Because that's another thing that a lot of people say is that, oh, what happens if something goes wrong? Have you, in all your years driving, have you had to fork out a big chunk of cash or anything?
No, my car has been trouble-free. The only things it's had four services in the 6 years that I've had it. And this is there are certain electric car models like Tesla that don't even have a service interval. They just say it doesn't need a service. Now, Renault does have a service in Duval, but I took it with a grain of salt, to be honest, because a lot of the things that are on normal cars, I'm going to call them normal cars, internal combustion engine cars, a lot of the things that are on them, I don't have oil changes. I don't have a gearbox. Well, I have a sort of, I have one moving part. That's the engine. I had to replace the 12 volt battery, which is a recommended service item for, Renault. So it's still just your standard, the standard battery that you have under the bonnet. And yeah. I had to buy new tires. That's pretty much it. I think my total cost of servicing, not including consumables like tires and wipers and lights, it was less than €1,000.
Oh, and are tires actually easy enough to get your hands on for an EV? I saw someone talking about this before.
No, tires are easy enough to get. Yeah. The only thing that electric cars have, because you have a battery hanging on the car, they tend to be heavier.
Oh, okay.
So you kind of need to get tires that are rated for heavier vehicles, but they're very easy to get and they don't cost, to my knowledge anyway, they don't cost any more than normal tires.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I was just wondering that myself.
Yeah. So the reduced maintenance is actually a big part.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I hate having to take my car to the garage, or you just don't know what cost is going to come back.
Yeah, no, of course. Now, my car has gone through the NCT, no problems, and I've been... Jesus, I've taken the car all over Ireland. I've taken it international, and it's been
really interesting. Brilliant. What's the longest drive you've done in an EV, actually, Ambert?
Well, my longest single drive was in 2015, where myself and a friend did Mizzenhead to Malinhead and back, in one continuous drive without stopping, and that was we just did it for fun, just to show that it can be done. I don't know why the heck we decided to do it in the middle of November. But it was a great drive. It took us 28 hours. And the only reason it took us 28 hours was because we got hit. We decided to do it in the middle of a named storm, and the entire western coastline was flooded. And we basically had to backtrack and go back through Dublin again. But anyway.
Oh, go away.
I also did a charity drive with a friend of mine in the UK. We drove a Renault Zoe from his house in Coventry to Salzburg in Austria. That was 2017, and we raised money for a local hospice, and we again did that without stopping, and we were so confident that we'd be able to do it that I actually didn't finish the route planning until about 2 hours prior to departure.
That seems smart.
Yeah, it was great. Because I found out the original route that I had planned was through France, but I found out that it was an actual national holiday and nothing would be open. And that included some of the critical charge points, which were at shopping centres, and the shopping centres would have been closed.
So we decided,
let's be safe and let's just drive a slightly different route. And I finished that about 2 hours before departure. So that was fun.
And how long did that take, actually, Ambert?
30 hours on the way up and 28 hours on the way back, because we knew what we were doing.
Wow. So once this is all over, you'll be obviously heading off again on some other...
Yeah,
journey.
Because like you said in the beginning, I'm Dutch and my family still live in Holland, and I usually drive to Holland. I did so before I got an electric car, and I didn't want an electric car to stop that. And I have taken my Zoe to Holland 4 times now, I think.
So what did you get on the ferry over to...
I did several routes. my wife has family in the UK as well, so we sometimes go through the UK, sometimes through France, and it's basically a giant circle. The last time I went up from my house here in Mallow to Harwich, so we drove to Dublin, took the ferry across to Holyhead, drove to Harwich, took an overnight ferry to Rotterdam. I did that drive from my house to Harwich in 1 day. So we left our house here at, I don't know, it was 3:30 in the morning or something like that to catch the ferry. And we were in Harwich at 9:30 at night, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's actually surprisingly easy once you do it, like I said, once. This is the other thing that people say about electric cars, that they wouldn't be able to plan constantly. If you look at your driving habits, you'll find that you have about 5 or 6 regular routes that you do. And like anything in life, things become a habit. So if you need to charge on one of those regular routes, you'll have to think about it once or twice. After that, it's habit.
Just plan it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
So Jan Bart, you talk about habit there. Do you see that driving an EV is a lot about behavior and habit? Does that mean that you're kind of envisioning that it's this bit of a lifestyle change then as you move from a petrol and diesel across to an EV then? Or as you said, does it just become the normality?
It becomes norm. I don't see myself as having to change my lifestyle. I don't think I would have been allowed to buy an electric car if it changed our lifestyle, to be honest.
Fair.
No, it's not a change in anything. I mean, having a home charge point basically means that I plug my car in. If I need to charge it, I plug my car in and I go about my business. The car takes care of itself, and when I need to use it, it's full. And it hasn't changed anything, really. If anything, because of the low cost in driving around the country, I'm driving more now than I used to.
Okay,
and like, do you think you've influenced anyone else in your life, Jan Bart, to kind of change to an EV?
Yes. Well, I make when I was researching electric cars, and when I started doing test drives, I started making YouTube videos, and I started it's a YouTube playlist. If you look it up, called My Electric Journey, because that's how I saw it.
Yeah, it's really good. I watched them. Yeah,
and I basically just go through my first episode is my test drive. And it is, you'll see the EV grin that I'm talking about in the first episode, because I cannot stop smiling. But there's a lot of people who've watched that. Well, there's a few people who've watched it. I won't say them. Not exactly a lot, but there's been a good few people who've bought electric cars as a result of my videos. My brother-in-law recently bought a Volkswagen e-Golf, and he was one of the people originally about 6 years ago who was fairly skeptical, and I'll say it nicely, he was fairly skeptical about me getting an electric car. But he's now a total convert. No, it's something that people will just have to make up their own minds, and what suits me doesn't suit everybody. But I think if someone sits down and does the sums and looks at their lifestyle and say, okay, what role is my car taking in this thing? How much do I do with it? Where do I go? And if you just think about it logically, about your fears, maybe talk to somebody who is an owner. As you said, I'm a member of the Irish EV Owners Association. You can look us up on Facebook. We have a large Facebook group of, I think we're about 4,500 members.
Yeah, it's really helpful.
And if you have any questions, just put them in there, and you'll find that there'll be a lot of helpful people. And now, obviously, you're talking to the converted as such, so we'll always say yes, it's a no-brainer. But if you have any real worries, just say it, and we might be able to work it out.
But you never really see people who have switched to EVs who kind of, after a couple of years, say, no, wasn't for me, you know. I think most people who drive them end up staying driving them, don't they, really?
Yeah, no, I have seen a few. I'll be honest. I have seen a few. And some of them have gone back to electric now that the newer, longer range electric cars are up, because their majority of their issues were around charging, and it was around the range. They found it was too much of a close margin, and they had to charge too often. But the vast majority, like you say, never go back. I personally won't be buying a gas car ever again, as they say.
That's good to hear. So what would you tell our listeners who were thinking about switching, but maybe they're kind of on the fence, they're not really sure, what should they do?
The biggest thing that I would do is do your research. Look up electric car models, see what your requirements are in terms of space, distance, and budget. Have a look and see what is available on the market. There are a good few used electric car dealers in Ireland. There is an awful lot of information out there. It can be a little bit daunting when you come to picking a car, and with the different... No electric car is alike as such. Everyone has their pros and cons. So find out what's important to you in terms of car. Then take one for a test drive. Just take one for a test drive. There's a lot of dealers who will offer an extended test drive. So say 24 hours, 48 hours, and do some of the your frequent journeys with an electric car and see how you get on.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's amazing that you can take an electric car for 24 hours. I actually think
that I think it's Opel who actually offer you can buy a Corsa E, and if you don't like it within 6 months, you can exchange it for a regular Corsa. So that's confidence. Exactly.
Basically,
do your research and just think a little bit outside of the box. Can you install a home charge point? Do you have a charge point at work? Is there a public charge point nearby where you can charge your car? What is your average daily mileage or even weekly mileage? What are your frequent journeys? And take it from there.
And Shane, do you want to come in there as well, just a little bit maybe about kind of the supports that SAI offer? So if you are thinking about switching or even just vaguely pondering it, what should you do?
Yeah, I can, of course. I just want to say, Jan Baird's a big fan of the term, the EV grin there.
Absolutely
fantastic. And you see it the whole time. I've been at events where there's been test drives on EVs, and anyone who comes back from test driving an EV, they are just over the moon. They're excited. They're just so enthusiastic about it as well. And the EV grin, it's the best term I had to kind of cover that one.
Can I actually ask, as someone who isn't big into cars, what causes the EV grin? Is it the speed, the technology? What is it?
It's the instant acceleration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The instant torque. It's not even the actual speed. Like, my car is by no means, it's not a speed demon, not at all. If you were to, if your first electric car that you sit in is a Tesla Model S Performance, forget it. The rest will disappoint.
But it's not going to be an issue for most of us, I'd say.
Well, they're more affordable than people sometimes think. But in either case, the performance, it's the instant acceleration. So in a normal car, when you put your foot down, you're standing at a traffic light, you put your foot down, the engine has to spin up before there's actually motion in the car. With an electric motor, that acceleration is instantaneous and pretty constant as well. So you're basically gone. I can probably out-accelerate pretty much anything at a traffic light. And that's just, it's absolutely brilliant.
Okay, so that's where the grin comes from. Okay. Yes. Sorry, Shane, back to telling us about the support. I just had to ask.
Yeah, it's no problem. At the minute, SAI offer a grant for the private purchase of an electric vehicle of €5,000 for a fully electric vehicle, and also €5,000 for a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle as well. And on our website, we actually have a list of the EVs, both the PHEV and the BEV, that are eligible for our grant as well. We mentioned a few more different incentives as well earlier, such as the home charger grants, the low tax rates on them as well, and the toll reduction that Jan Bart mentioned earlier as well. I think that's, you can save up to €500 a year on toll. So if you're going through tolls for work the whole time, it could be a great incentive to help you make it.
Yeah, nobody likes paying a toll.
Not at all. Not at all. And you can get one of the tags then as well, and you can just drive straight through. There'll be no stopping or anything.
Lovely. Jan Bart, I want to ask you, what's the best thing about being an EV driver? So I think you've kind of probably mentioned it there a lot with the EV grin. What else?
It's the smoothness and the quietness of the drive. One of my favorite things to do, I live in North Cork, so I'm semi-countryside. In the summer with the nice bright evenings, I love driving around with the windows down and all you hear is the wind and the birds. There's no engine noise, there's no smoke, there's nothing. That's the best. It's just the serenity of the drive. If you drive an electric car for a week or a month and you go back into a regular car, the first thing you'll notice is the vibrations, the noise, the smells.
That must be really jarring now when you sit into someone else's car. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of, I kind of put it akin to, say, someone who's smoking cigarettes and who then quits smoking and then walks past somebody who's smoking.
Yeah, and it smells horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's my main thing. It's just the quietness of it. The technology behind it is absolutely lovely. Like this morning, it was 0 degrees outside, so everybody's car window was frozen over. If I had somewhere to go, I would be able to defrost my car from the comfort of my house, or even set it on a timer, and my windscreen would be defrosted. In some models, you'll have a warm steering wheel, warm seat, a warm car. You could just come out of your house, unplug the car, and drive away. There's no messing with kettles or scrapers or any of
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, lovely. Heaven on a cold morning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of, it gives me a bit of a smug face every once in a while.
Well, listen, you deserve it. I wanted to ask as well, just put it to the two of you, the target of 980,000 EVs on the road by 2030. Do you think it's achievable? What do we need to do now to encourage people to make it happen? I'll put it to the two of you.
Yeah, sure. I suppose I'd kick off with that one. Well, first thing I'd say, I think everyone will understand and be acceptable that it is an ambitious target. But the way I see it is, why not be ambitious? This is the way the whole world is going to be moving. Everyone is going to be moving towards it. But here in Ireland, it's important to everyone involved has some joined up thinking, and everyone gets the shoulder behind the wheel into the one direction. Because even during the COVID pandemic, where car sales in Ireland are on a decrease, the EV sales growth is just, it's still increasing year on year. Now, again, I would say that the market share is still probably touching in the single percentage, but it's grown and it's shown increased growth when the overall industry is slowing down. So there is something happening. There is growth happening.
There
it's
is,
just a matter about driving that momentum, increasing it, and just getting everyone moving towards it. Like, as we alluded to before, the upfront cost can be a big barrier. The cost can be a barrier, but a lot of people don't think about the overall cost, the overall cost of ownership of the cars, how it's going to save you on petrol and diesel every year, maintenance every year, what happens when the ball bearings start going in your engine compared to when you just have an electric motor there, there's no ball bearings, there's no piston rings, things like that. So the advantages of driving electric are there. It's just about getting that mass market uptake of it. And as you can see this year, the number of models that are coming out has been phenomenal, and what they can do and achieve is fantastic as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's just one thing I want to add. In order for it to be achievable, and in order to encourage more people to take it up, what also has to change is the utility of an electric car. I'll use one example here locally is towing. So the vast majority of electric cars at the moment are not rated to be capable of towing. It's not that they can't tow, it's that they're currently not rated as being allowed to tow for insurance reasons. Not entirely
sure.
They're
well able to tow, but they're just not rated.
Absolutely well able to tow. My Renault Zoe, I saw, I was in Austria that time when we did the charity drive, and the Austrian Renault Zoe's Association, they had tow bars on their Renault Zoe's, whereas over here in Ireland, it's not allowed. I'm quite sure you can do it in Ireland as well. I just haven't been able to figure out how. You can get an individual license to be able to tow. So you can get your car checked similar to the NCT, and they can say, yes, this car is okay for towing, and it can give you a cert, which is relatively easy to do in the likes of Austria and Germany, apparently.
Okay.
And a lot of people do. So they have small little, and it doesn't have to be big, but if you're a farmer and you use your car for towing a horse box or cattle or whatever like that, if you can't do that with an electric car, range or anything like that, doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of my dad. If you told him he couldn't tow a trailer, that would put him right off.
Exactly. So that's one thing that is one thing that needs to change. Other than that, it's a relatively simple, for the vast majority of people, it's a relatively simple transition.
What would you like to see what's your dream for EVs in Ireland for the future?
I'd love to see more of them, first of all. What I would like to see is, primarily on the charging side, is a larger, more expansive charging infrastructure, so that the perceived barrier of needing charge points everywhere just doesn't exist. Now, I do think like we said, we're living on an island. If you had an electric car that can do several hundred kilometers, it becomes less of an issue. But in the likes of Dublin, where a lot of people don't have a driveway, home charging is an issue.
Yeah.
Or lack of, I should say. The other thing I would love to see is the way those charge points are powered. So a larger part of them being powered by renewable energy, say solar or something along that line. I have solar panels on my roof since, July this year, and I'm in essence able to drive around for free, terms and conditions apply. I'm able to generate my own fuel in essence, and that is actually one of the best feelings I've had this year, is that driving around knowing that your car is powered by 100% renewable energy that you made yourself.
Yeah, that has to be a good feeling. Did getting solar panels come around just to charge the car, or have you gotten interest in loads of other kind of renewable energy technologies as a result?
No, the car was not the main reason why I got it, because physics tells me that it's impossible for me to charge my car from solar panels 100% of the time. My current car, my Renault Zoe, the battery in that car holds about as much energy as my entire house uses in probably a week.
Wow.
So there isn't, unless I had a 10-acre field and I was able to put in an enormous amount of solar panels, there isn't a hope for me to get a full charge. I can get a nice top up, but it was definitely not the main focus. My main focus was to reduce my dependence on the energy grid and to even offer something like, say a bit of more self-sufficiency. So yeah. I have solar panels and a battery, and I do believe the SAAI have grants for that available at the moment as well.
We do.
I'm not sure for how long, but I was able to take advantage of that. And it's been absolutely brilliant.
Jan Bart, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. We could stay going all day, I'd say. We'll definitely have to have you back. Thanks to you both, and thanks to Shane as well. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, then please like, share, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening now. You'll find previous episodes on our website, seai.ie/podcast, along with information about our grants and supports. See you next week.